And the Centers for Spiritual Living is a global organization, and of which we are a happy, happy, joyful participant, a joyful member, that we, One Love Center, we welcome you to a place where love grows. That's our motto, and that's what we choose to live by. Have a welcoming place where love grows, and when you show up, love grows even more. So thank you once again for your listening. Thank you for your joining in. And I do want to say that we are on a mission. We are on a mission to provide stable and welcoming community for all who choose to practice and grow, play and unfold their understanding of spiritual principles and spiritual living. And by that I mean not just a community that meets on Sunday, which we do. We meet on the first and third Sunday of every month, but a worldwide community. There is a consciousness of love that grows from when each one of us expands our understanding of spiritual principles and lives from that place. That's our mission. So therefore, we have a vision, and that vision is to see the world as a sacred environment where spiritual growth and development flourish through living in the practice of spiritual principles. Very simply put, we know that by living spiritual principles, we become free to enjoy the sacred environment that it creates. So One Love Center does meet the first and third Sunday of every month. We meet at the Village at Garige, Durinete Albertson Martin Gallery, 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York, 11236. Did I fail to mention that we are in Brooklyn? Yes, we are. We are the only Centers for Spiritual Living teaching chapter, center, church in Brooklyn, New York. I'm the spiritual director, co-spiritual director, Rodney Giddens, and as well as Hajar Rahim, who is a licensed minister. We do have a website. It's onelovecenter.org, www.onelovecenter.org. That's onelovecenter.org, onelovecenter.org. The phone number is 917-755-1418. Number again is 917-755-1418. So we are so glad to have you with us, and we are going to jump back into The Power of Now. And The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, The Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment, is a wonderful, wonderful study. And whether you're just listening in for the first time or you've been with us for the previous nine chapters, we welcome you. And I know that with spiritual principles, it doesn't matter where you start because they are all compatible with one another. Meaning, if we start at forgiveness or we start with love or we start with peace, it doesn't matter. If it's spiritual, it's going to work for you. And it doesn't depend on your level of understanding. You don't need to understand much about love for it to work for you. Right?
That's right. Absolutely.
So, yeah. How about it? And a little bit of forgiveness will take you a long way, just like a little bit of faith. That's another one of those spiritual principles that you don't need a whole lot of to work in your favor. Okay, so we are actually have technically finished Chapter 9. What I'd like to do is just briefly go over the very end of Chapter 9, because that will lead us into Chapter 10. And if there's anything that comes up for you, Hajar, just please feel free to, if you feel like it needs a little not regressing, but if you want to do a little summarizing, please feel free. What the one thing that comes up for me is a different order of reality. And that
okay.
has to do with death and dying and just different realization of a different dimension. And so what really comes up for me is when he says, your perception, this is the bottom of page 164. Eckhart Tolle says, remember that your perception of the world is a reflection of your state of consciousness. You are not separate from it, and there is no objective world out there. Every moment, your consciousness creates the world that you inhabit. One of the greatest insights that has come out of modern physics is that of the unity between observer and the observed, the person conducting the experiment and the observing consciousness. It cannot be separated from the observed phenomena. And a different way of looking causes the observed phenomena to behave differently. If you believe on a deep level in separation and the struggle for survival, then you see that belief reflected all around you, and your perceptions are governed by fear. You inhabit a world of death and of bodies fighting, killing, and devouring each other. It's really gross on that. But what he does say is that the world you create and see through the egoic mind may seem a very imperfect place, even a veil of tears, but whatever you perceive is only kind of a symbol, like an image in a dream. It is how your consciousness interprets and interacts with the molecular energy dance of the universe. This energy is the raw material of so-called physical reality. As you see it in terms of bodies and birth and death, or as a struggle for survival. Because there's an infinite number of completely different interpretations, completely different worlds. It's possible and, in fact, exists, all depending on the perceiving consciousness. So to me, that's really important as we move into looking at surrender. And so I just wanted to back up and look at that for a moment.
And that is so true because, you know, when you talk about the perceiving consciousness, and it's depending upon your consciousness as to how you experience the world. And we have all of these different religions, and they all come from their particular point of view, their perceiving consciousness of God, of religion, and what it is that you're supposed to do, and what it means to be saved or to be a sinner or however you look at it. And different religions come from different points of view. They're all pieces of the puzzle. Because when you look at what they teach, if you can look at it from the metaphysical point of view, you can see that even though it may be speaking to the physical, as above, so below, so you get in your physical outpicturing what you have in your consciousness. And so as we teach, it's about consciousness, and then look at, well, what is consciousness? And your consciousness is what you're thinking, is your thoughts, is what you're thinking. That's your consciousness, your awareness of what's going on around you is your consciousness as a reflection of your experience in the world. And so if you think about your experience in the world, you have to think about, well, what am I thinking about that? And that is what's bringing that into place for you. And different people have different experiences of the same state. Or the same person can have a different experience of the same thing. Wayne Dyer said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Mm-hmm. And so as we continue to develop our consciousness and our awareness and our interpretation of what's going on in the universe, then the universe takes on a different meaning for all of us.
And that's true. And the thing is, our greatest strength is to be able to perceive things differently. The whole tagline for religious science, the science of mind, now Centers for Spiritual Living, it still is, change your thinking, change your life. The question is, how do you change your thinking? How do you change your life?
Right, exactly.
How do you change your perception?
Mm-hmm.
I love the story of the two people walking down a dirt road, and there's a stick on the road, and it looks like a snake. And both people had different experiences as a child of snakes. So they walk up on the stick, and one person says, "Oh, wow, look, a snake. Hey, let's go pick it up," you know. And the other person who was scared of snakes and had a bad experience, an unpleasant experience as a child with snakes, was ready to run the other way. They're like, "Oh, my God, a snake," and was ready to run. And so the difference is all in perception. Now, it wasn't even a snake, but both of them had a different perception. Their worlds were completely different based on their perception. So one person thinking had them on the run, away, and the other person in fear. And the other person felt nothing but joy and wanted to run to the snake because they had a joyful experience with snakes. So, and it happens in our lives pretty much most of the time because everything that goes on is a perception. I have a friend, and I kind of hope she doesn't listen to this segment, but maybe she'd take it differently by now. But we were walking, and we're walking to a car, and she said, she just said, "Oh, my God," and bolted out towards the street. And if I hadn't caught her by the arm, she would have got hit by a car. I said, "What happened? What would make you jump like that? What happened?" She said, "A cat. I saw a cat." I said, "Where? I don't see a cat." First of all, I said, "I don't see a cat." "Over there," she pointed, down the block, across the street. And she had unpleasant experiences with cats. So as soon as she saw a cat, all she knew was run. However, she was ready to run into the street and really upset her world. You know,
no.
She would have got hit. And I said, "Why is this? No, I'm scared of cats. They hate me, you know." And she goes, I said, "But first of all, that cat is down the block across the street, and it's walking the other way. It's just walking away from us. It couldn't see her. It had no perception of her. It had nothing to do with her. And yet, her perception had already turned her world upside down." And to me, I think, and this happened, oh, gosh, probably close to 20 years ago. Now, she's still afraid of cats to this day. However, well, I mean, she's a little older, so she doesn't move as fast. But she has a little bit more understanding that she has more power over her thoughts, beliefs, and actions than she did 20 years ago. Now she's changed her perception of herself. She's changed. She's allowed herself to be a bit more powerful and not think that there was something out to get her. She's releasing, in light of the chapter that we're moving into, she was surrendering her victimhood. So she was in a place of surrender. She was surrendering the fear to a greater awareness of truth. So I just wanted to bring that up because that's very important when we talk about changing.
Changing perceptions, yeah.
Well, it's not going to happen until we surrender something. We have to give something up if we're surrendering. We have to give up. We have to give up the fight, give up a belief, we have to give up a lie. And what is that saying? That
you have to give up the
lie?
Story.
Well, yeah, the story. You know, and most people think their story is true anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, sometimes when you're talking to people about a story, about, you know, basically it's gossip when people talk about each other, and somebody can fill you in on the missing pieces because none of us have the whole story. Nobody has the whole story because it's always three sides to the story, depending on who's looking at it.
At least, you know,
what happened and your perception of that, which is your perception of it, your little piece of that pie. But we don't get the whole thing because it's impossible to get the whole story because you have to know what the events were that led up to that story and all that stuff. It goes on and on and on. But when two people are talking about a situation and then you hear, but you know, somebody saying, well, this is what happened, blah-de-blah, and they say, no, that's not how it went. This is what really happened, you know, and then they give you a different perspective on that particular event that you're discussing. He says, oh, well, I didn't know that. Well, that makes a difference. And I know many of us have been in those situations where we've discussed an event of some sort that may have been pleasant or unpleasant and gotten more information from a different perspective from somebody else and changed our mind because we've changed our perception of what was going on. In fact, there's this story about the cashier who was being very rude and impatient with the customers coming up. And people just thought, oh, she's just a rude person and, you know, she should be fired and they should do all this stuff to her. And then one woman came up who was more spiritually astute and said, you know, you must be really having a bad day. And she said, yes, my son is in the hospital and they won't let me get off to go take care of him. If I leave, I'll lose my job. Then I won't have any health insurance to take care of him and he's in the hospital. She wanted to be in the hospital with her son, not on that job. And so here she is torn between being with her son in the hospital and providing some type of comfort to him and being on this job so she can actually be in a situation where she can take care of him. And she was just having a really difficult time dealing with those two opposing forces within her. But once you hear that story, then you're all into empathy and like, wow, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, if there's anything I can do to help. You know, maybe you could go visit the son or call to get some flowers or something. I don't know. But it's a perception, the same situation, but looking at how different people are reacting to it is makes a difference on how we then view that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to read something from, of course, in Miracles. And it has to do with the change of perception. And
uh-huh.
So a little preface on this is that when you hear the word God and the word Christ, you know, you can take it very literally, like they are people or personas, or you can look at them as symbols. However, there's a deeper message. So let me read this. It says, "The real world was given you by God in loving exchange for the world you made and the world you see." He goes on to say, "Only take it from the hand of Christ and look upon it." And I would translate that to mean, only take it from the hand of awareness,
uh-huh.
from spiritual awareness, and look upon it, the real world. Its reality will make everything else invisible, for beholding it is total perception. And as you look upon it, you will remember that it was always so. Nothingness will become invisible, for you will at last have seen truly. Redeemed perception is easily translated into knowledge, for only perception is capable of error, and perception has never been. Being corrected, it gives place to knowledge, which is forever the only reality. The atonement is but the way back to what was never lost. Your father could never cease to love his son. And that last statement to me just means that that which created us, that created you, is always loving. And I think the whole premise in the Course in Miracles is to find our way back to love, is to realize that we were never truly separated. And so the perception like it says, it was always so. As you look upon it, you will remember that it was always so. There's going to be something within you that knows that, you know, this truth has been with me all time. It was only that I had a different perception of the truth that made me think that I was separate from it. And when we come from that place, that is, in the midst of that, is a surrender of the old and embracing not just the new, but embracing that which before whatever we made, because what I made is no way is going to be the total reality of all that is. It's only going to be, like you said, it's just a slice. It's just a part of the wholeness of reality.
Right.
But the real world, when we see with the eyes of God, when we are fully in and at one minute, and even in here, it's called atonement. But if you just change the words around a little bit, it looks like at one minute.
At one minute, yeah.
When we are one with the Spirit, when we are in ascension mode, we get to see you with the eyes of the Creator, recognizing that we are co-creators with the universe, and however you want to spin it, we get to see the wholeness. We get to see that in each and every one, because we're seeing it in ourselves, and all there is one. Now, all there is one, then we can't help but see wholeness. We can't help but see oneness.
Exactly.
And that's what this is about. And that's what the power of now is about, because when we're practicing the power of now, all there is now, all there is one life. One moment, one huge moment in what we might want to call time. But that I love how it says the nothingness will become invisible. All that stuff that we try to make something out of will just disappear, becomes invisible. And that includes our perception of time, past, future, nothing. The only thing that is something is right now, this now moment. So I love that. I love bringing that up.
Yeah.
And,
I'd also like to read from this book called The 11 Laws of God by Ma'at, M-A-A-T. Mm-hmm. And it's from the Kemet, I think I'm saying that right, teaching. It says, from the lower part of our being, we get guidance from our feelings, blind emotional forces. From this part of being, we also get guidance from the part of our mind that deals in opinions and irrational thinking. We enter into a judgment of good or evil, beneficial or harmful, etc., about things based on our feelings, opinions, or sound bites picked up indiscriminately here and there. The good, the bad, and evil, etc., all defined subjectively, each according to a person's conditioning. So then he goes on to say, once the 11 laws of God are directing your thinking, emotions, and actions, you will have the spiritual power and wisdom to control and or be in harmony with your enemies or your surroundings. So they say they are the ticket, talking about the enemies or the disharmony or the challenges you face. They are your ticket to greater wisdom and spiritual power.
So let's take a look at the power of now, and it's nice because all that comes brings us right back. It's about being empowered with right thinking and right seeing.
Right.
And to do that, we need to surrender. So with that, we move on to chapter 10. Yay! The meaning of surrender. Acceptance of the now. And this is on page 171 in the hardcover. And he starts off, and we ended last week by saying, reading the first paragraph. To some people, surrender may have negative connotations, implying defeat, giving up, failing to rise to the challenges of life, becoming lethargic, and so on. True surrender, however, is something entirely different. It does not mean to passively put up with whatever situation you find yourself in and do nothing about it. Nor does it mean to cease making plans or initiating positive action. Surrender is a simple but profound wisdom of yielding to, rather than opposing, the flow of life. The only place where you can experience the flow of life is the now. And so to surrender is to accept the present moment unconditionally and without reservation. It is to relinquish any resistance to what is. Inner resistance is to say no to what is, through mental judgment and emotional negativity. It becomes particularly pronounced when things, in quotes, go wrong, which means that there is a gap between the demands or rigid expectations of your mind and what is. That is the pain gap. If you have lived long enough, you will know that things go wrong quite often. It is precisely at those times that surrender needs to be practiced if you want to eliminate pain and sorrow from your life. Acceptance of what is immediately frees you from your mind identification and thus reconnects you with being. Resistance is the mind. Resistance, it doesn't say this, but resistance is the ego. Because when we identify ourselves with the ego, with the mind, well, there's going to be resistance to truth, because the ego is the one that's trying to tell you what's the truth, right?
Yeah.
We've been hearing it throughout this whole book. So now he just defines mind and ego as resistance. It's the resistance to the goodness of life, to what is in the moment.
And a lot of that has to do. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
A lot of that, talking about the resistance, a lot of it has to do with our negative upbringing. You know, we've been brought up to see things in a certain way and entertain different viewpoints we talked about before as prejudices or inclinations towards wanting to be a certain way. And so what happens is that we, when we have these other viewpoints or these other perspectives come into our lives, then we have to change that and it becomes a resistance because we're trying to do something different than what we've been taught or even what the people in our world, our language have in our homes. He talks about the tribe and stuff, even what they have taught us. And so we have to then come to a different way of looking at it and make it okay. And science of mind, we have both and. We can do both. We can acknowledge that this is how we're brought up, and I can change. You know, you don't have to make them wrong, which is what most people tend to do, try to make somebody wrong. But what we can do is acknowledge, yes, this is how it has been, and this is how I was, but, you know, I no longer need to be that way or do those things because those things no longer help me, serve me, or are in my best interest. And so we have to get past that part of resistance to change.
So one of the things that's so important about what you said is, you know, is change. Now,
right.
Change, and actually here's another spiritual message from Ishmael Tete. And many of you may have heard of him. He's an African mystic. He has a book called The Way Forward, Nature's Principles and Practices for Empowered Living. And he talks about change. He talks about surrender as well. He says about change, to fight against what is inevitable. Well, first he starts off saying, this is in his book, the way forward, principle 7, the practice of conscious change. Grow with change. Change is inevitable and is always happening. When embraced early, it occurs in joy. When delayed, it comes with pain. Something is always seeking to give birth to itself in every moment. There is no standstill in life. There's either moving ahead or falling behind. It says each moment you are changing. In fact, you are not the same person you saw or knew a moment ago. Even in your body, moment by moment, old cells are dying and new ones are being born. You are like a kaleidoscope, field of shimmering colors, changing every moment. I'm going to skip down, and he says, to fight against what is inevitable is to experience pain. Embrace change and celebrate life. Embrace the newness that change brings in each moment. Review and gracefully surrender attitudes that do not serve you. And so there you have it as well. And I'd say they are in alignment with surrender and what needs to happen and how surrender needs to precede change. And I'm glad. Now, this is, again, the power of now, and that was actually page 93. And The Way Forward by Ishmael Tete. And there's a consciousness to bring him back to the East Coast. He's a very popular man on the West Coast of the country, and, of course, in his home country of Ghana. And we would love to have him bring his teachings here as well. And so in The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle mentions it, that if you find your life situation unsatisfactory or even intolerable, it's only by surrendering first that you can break the unconscious resistance pattern that perpetuates the situation, that situation. So the only way to get out of it, that vicious cycle of pain that Ishmael Tete talked about, and the unsatisfactory or intolerable life situation that Eckhart Tolle says, gotta surrender. Surrender first.
Mm-hmm.
First. Now, I know I'll speak for myself, but I'm sure that there are many who can identify. If you've ever seen the poster of a wall poster of a cat that's claws are dug into a tree.
Right, hanging
and,
there.
And the poster and the caption says surrender, you know, and it's like it's just like not letting go, you know. It's like and it's mostly through fear that what's gonna happen? I'm gonna fall. You know, now cats happen to land on their feet. But when we identify with that, we don't necessarily have that experience. You know,
mm-hmm.
It usually seems like it's going to be a hard landing. So we dug in. And it's just long scratch marks as we eventually are falling, you know. But we're not going to let go. You know, we're not letting go easily. And at some point, our hands just get, our claws get tired, or we might even lose our nails because we just dug in so deep. And the whole weight of that pain, of that unsatisfactory life situation just pulls us down until we surrender and let go and allow. And that's when the allowing comes in, allowing for a different perception. Because once we let go, we can see maybe there's a different way to handle this situation, like you said before, Roger.
Right.
But as long as we're dug in, we're only stuck on that fear of what's going to happen if I fall. It's not even reality. It's just the image of the world in our mind that we made up. And until we can let that go, as it said in a Course of Miracles, you know, only look in the hand of Christ. Only look in the hand of this heightened awareness of truth. Then you're going to see things differently. Then you're going to see, oh, well, maybe I was only, like, you know, 10 inches off the ground anyway. I can't let go. I'm not going to crash and burn. You know, I'm not going to fall
right.
and break and fall apart. Now,
and this is where a spiritual community of like-minded people come in to support each other. Because a lot of times you can't change yourself. You can't change yourself by yourself. You have
right.
to have other people, because we're all interconnected. We're all reflecting each other back to each other. So in order for us to really make those changes, we need to have other people on that same path who can help us do that. I know I had a change of perception this past weekend when we went to United House, the United Palace of House of Inspiration, formerly Reverend Ike's church. And they had Ricky Byers and a musical concert that was just really fantastic. She said something that really changed my perception of how I was handling a couple of issues in my life, which made my stress level go way down. She said things happen organically, and she's learned to live with the organic flow of life, meaning that things just happen. They're out of your control. You get tweaked for whatever reason, and something is going on, and it's organic, so you just go with it and see where that leads you. And so I was having something going on in my family, and I was upset about a couple of people and what was going on with them and how that was affecting everybody else. And when she says things unfold organically, I'm like, oh, okay, let this organically unfold. And I was at peace with it. And being at peace with it, it was happy. I've been able to interact with this particular family member on a whole nother level than what I was actually doing before. I've been able to extend more love, interact with him. And before, it's like, you know, I don't want to be bothered.
mm-hmm.
So we are having a really good time now, whereas I just thought I was just going to be miserable for the little while that he was here. But I'm really am enjoying his company. It's just amazing. But
now,
I changed,
you know,
my perception. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Now, and that's the thing I wanted to add, because the only thing that really changed was your perception. And that had
right.
to happen first. But what happened first was you surrendered. You had the input, like you said, from the spiritual community. And then you got, like you said, you got that assistance to surrender, or the inspiration
right.
to surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And when you did, change happened.
Change happened,
now,
yeah.
Now, the outer change happened. The outer change followed your inner change.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times we want the outer change to happen without us doing anything. What's wrong with them? How come they don't change?
Right.
and you took the powerful step.
But, you know, he never knew the difference.
No.
He's still doing what he was doing. It wasn't anything. It was all me, and I recognized this is me and my reaction. He was fine, you know?
Yeah, well,
he was happy-go-lucky. Everything was good. I was reacting to him. He was not reacting to me, and I had to get myself in line. And it happened with the help, you know, that song, We Get By With a Little Help From Our Friends.
Because
we need to have people, our friends, to help us through these difficult times. So I'm just saying that, you know, when we talk about change of mind and all this other stuff, one of the reasons why we're on Blog Talk Radio is to help and assist people in changing their minds, the way that they're looking at things and how they're thinking about things. This is a change. And we're here to help each other grow and develop and change, because we're all one and we can relate to each other from that level of oneness. And so when you are in a difficult situation, or if you're in a situation where, you know, I want to do something different, react to it differently, then there are people you can call. And you can call One Love Center at 917-755-1418 to say, I need some help, I need to talk, I need some prayer work, and we can assist you.
Sure. Or you can email us.
Oh, we can email us at onelove@onelovecenter.org.
Or if it's a prayer request, you can email prayerrequest@onelovecenter.org. And we will know the very truth about that situation. And if you like, we can contact you and pray with you and about you and for you, but more so know the truth about you or about somebody else.
Yes.
That's what we do. And it's interesting because even change is brought about, as you know, by how you change your thoughts. And that's what prayer is. Prayer is actually thought in action. It's thought that is with a purpose, I know you know that quote because I've heard you say it before, about the concentrated power of thought. I mean, to me, that's what prayer is.
Right.
Focusing your prayer, focused prayer is stronger than random thoughts or something to that effect. It's just pretty much the same.
Well, you know, it's like a laser beam. When you have a focused thought, it's like a laser beam.
Because, right,
you know, you have light, and light is diffused all over the place. But when you get a magnifying glass, such as prayer, and you focus it on something, that thing is going to heat up and then eventually burn up. And that's a little experiment that you learn in Boy Scouts how to start a fire. You know, you learn it in school about the power of magnetism or concentration and focus and light and energy and laser beams. That's what laser beams are. Focus, light, you know. And so it makes a difference when you pray. You're focusing your thought. You're getting it crystallized. You're getting it clear. And then that has that energy to go into that situation and change it. See, prayer changes things. And it changes it by that intent, that intense intent for something better or different in your life.
Yeah. So, and thank you for that, for helping me out with that. So, getting back into surrender and the power of now, the meaning of surrender, he says, surrender is a purely inner phenomenon. Does not mean that on an outer level you cannot take action and change the situation. In fact, it is not the overall situation that you need to accept when you surrender, but just a tiny segment called the now. For example, if you were stuck in the mud somewhere, you wouldn't say, okay, I resign myself to being stuck in the mud. Resignation is not surrender. You don't need to accept an undesirable or unpleasant life situation, nor do you need to deceive yourself and say that there's nothing wrong with being stuck in the mud. No, you recognize fully that you want to get out of it. You then narrow your attention down to the present moment without mentally labeling it in any way, which means it's not good, bad, or anything. This means that there is no judgment of the now. Therefore, there is no resistance, no emotional negativity. You accept the isness of this moment. Then you take action and do all that you can to get out of the mud. Such action I call positive action. It is far more effective than negative action, which arises out of anger, despair, or frustration. Until you achieve the desired result, you continue to practice surrender by refraining from labeling the now.
Right. And that is so true,
mm-hmm,
that we have to reframe and look at something as it is. It says what is, is. So what is happening here, our judgment or our opinions about what is happening is not exactly what is happening. What is happening here is, in his example, you're stuck in some mud. And truth be told, the more you resist being stuck in the mud, the muddier you get. You know? You know? getting all upset, you're just going to make more mud get on your clothes and your body and stuff because you're into a negative state of mind. But when you stop and say, okay, so I'm stuck in this mud, so now what do I do to get unstuck? And then you can visualize or you can surmise what is it that I need to do to get out of this mud. And you're more powerful because you're using positive energy as opposed to making it worse by using negative energy.
Well, you know, there's a, even a, he gives a visual analogy, and I'll read that in a moment. However, if you think of quicksand, I don't know if you've ever been in quicksand, but maybe you've seen it on TV or in a movie.
Right.
In quicksand, the more you struggle, the more it pulls you in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've encountered quicksand, and it's so true. You have to be still. You have to really be in the now moment, and you know, just be as still as possible. And the slower you move, the more progress you make. But you can't figure that out if you're struggling and frantic.
Right.
And it's scary because it seems like the opposite. It seems like, I want to get out of here, you know. And the faster you move, the more stuck you are. And it's just amazing because you can actually rise to the top without struggling, and you can move slowly and make your way through. And sometimes, and even today, on my way to work today, and I left very early this morning, and it was pretty light traffic. It was like, you know, it wasn't even rush hour, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I left my driveway, I'm in the street, people kept getting in front of me, cutting in front of me, you know, stopping short, all this stuff. So I was just like, okay, I mean, usually when it's like that, I'm not going to try to speed up or get around them anyway, unless it looks like I need to. But it was just amazing how block after block, here comes somebody that just shot through the stop sign. Here's somebody that pulled out of a parking spot, maybe slant, put the brakes on. And I just said, you know what, I'm just going to just take my time. I'll just go slow. And it happened all the way to work. I mean, it happened for about a good 15 minutes where it didn't matter where I was, different cars, whether it's a bus or a truck. And I said, you know what, I surrender. I'm not even going to call them getting in my way. They're just doing what they're doing. And so I get to work, and one of my coworkers also came extremely early. It was the funniest thing. And so he said, hey, how are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm great. You know, how was your day? I'm like, well, so far so good. I'm here. And I said, it was the funniest thing. For a while, it seemed like everybody was getting in my way. And he said, well, I guess they want you to slow down. I said, well, I was slowing down. No matter how slow I went, people were still getting in my way. And so I affirmed that they're not in my way. You know,
uh-huh.
And then by that time, I was just about in my parking spot. But it was like my perception had to change, you know, and I was almost expecting people to be in my way. And so once I released it, once I surrendered that thinking and that perception of people who are on the road also, and maybe they're just not paying attention or whatever it is, but I stopped labeling it as being in my way. And that's what I heard. I started, like we heard from Ishmael Tete.
Right.
You know, I stopped having an attitude that did not serve me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I realized that, no, they're not in my way, they're just on the same road I'm on, you know, in front of me.
Right.
And I just had to leave it as what is, as I told you. It's just an isness.
It's what is.
Of the moment.
Yeah.
And then I was free. But I had to really pay attention to that because I wanted to have a comfortable ride into work, you know, without thinking that people are in my way, you know. And so I surrendered. And for the rest of the trip, I felt pretty free. I felt, you know, that freedom that comes from surrender. So Eckhart Tolle does say in this example He says, let me give you a visual analogy to illustrate the point I'm making. You are walking along a path at night surrounded by a thick fog, but you have a powerful flashlight that cuts through the fog and creates a narrow, clear space in front of you. The fog is your life situation, which includes past and future. The flashlight is your conscious presence. The clear space is the now. Non-surrender hardens your psychological form, the shell of the ego, and so creates a strong sense of separateness. The world around you and people in particular come to be perceived as threatening. The unconscious compulsion to destroy others through judgment arises, as does the need to compete and dominate. Even nature becomes your enemy, and your perceptions and interpretations are governed by fear. And I was feeling that today, this morning. They're in my way, taking something away from me, and it was a competition to get to the next block or to get to the next light. They're in my way. They want to go somewhere too. You know?
If you read the top of that, if you read the top of that next paragraph.
Sure. It says the mental disease that we call paranoia is only a slightly more acute form of this normal but dysfunctional state of consciousness. And so that's what happens. We get it starts in the mind, and the world that we create from our misperceptions starts to have a physiological effect. Starts out psychological, and the longer it persists in our bodies, in our consciousness, it moves into our body physiologically.
Right, physiological, yeah.
Mental disease from a dysfunctional state of consciousness.
And it also shows up as physical diseases. It says, going on the next paragraph, not only your psychological form, but also your physical form, your body, becomes hard and rigid through resistance. Tension arises in the different parts of the body, and the body as a whole contracts. The free flow of life energy through the body, which is essential for its healthy functioning, is greatly restricted. Body work and certain forms of physical therapy are helpful in restoring this flow. But unless you practice surrender in your everyday life, those things can only give you temporary relief, since the cause, the resistance pattern, has not been dissolved.
And that's important, because the temporary symptom, first of all, the important word is temporary, and it's a symptom, meaning it's not the inner cause, it's just the outer result of the inner cause. And so all that does, and a lot of people go for massage, go for body work, they also belly up to the bar, you know, they go get some drinks or get some other drugs, or they use something outside of themselves to provide temporary symptom relief.
Right.
Because they're not addressing the cause. Like I said, the resistance pattern has not been dissolved, whatever the cause is, and usually it comes from fear. And if you're coming from fear, that means you're stuck in the ego mind, identifying with the mind, allowing the ego to run the show. And once that happens, of course you're in resistance, and it's resistance to what is. And what is, and I actually have an acronym for is, I-S, which is infinite spirit. Infinite spirit. You know, God is, you know, infinite spirit. Or however you want to, creator is. You is. We is. We're all infinite spirit. That's was. No, we don't know. But, but in truth, the state of consciousness, we can only, like you said, very difficult to get to that state of consciousness by ourselves.
Right.
That's the power of community, of spiritual community. So you don't want to be in a gab fest around a whole bunch of other people who are in resistance. I had a coworker today, and I was coming back from lunch, and she was kind of outside, I guess, for her lunch, and she started complaining about the day, about how busy it was, and all this stuff. And I was like, so glad that I can say, well, my lunchtime's over, I gotta go. Because she never, hardly ever talks to me. I mean, we do hello, hi, how are you, you know, stuff like that. But I felt like I was gonna be a captive, you know, audience, and I would have had to participate in that mess. I'm like, well, lunchtime's over, I gotta go. I didn't want to be in her perception, because I wasn't having a bad day like that. It was
right,
busy, but it wasn't. I wasn't
bad.
Complaining about it. You know, it's busy, and I realized how if I didn't have that thought, I could have stayed there and listened. And there's a saying, especially in 12-step land, in Land of Recovery, they say if you sit in a barbershop long enough, you'll get a haircut. You know? And it's so true, because it starts becoming familiar. We start hearing those same words in our own voice, because it's going filtering into our brain, and when we're repeating it in our mind, and then we hear it in our voice. So then we get ownership of it. Like, no, I don't want to hear that. No, I'm not having that experience. And so, no, I'm not being in resistance to what is. It's busy. Okay, it's been busier before. So he goes on to say, there is something within you that remains unaffected by the transient circumstances that make up your life situation, and only through surrender do you have access to it. It is your life, your very being, which exists eternally and in a timeless realm of the present. Finding this life is the one thing that is needed that Jesus taught. And I read that in A Course in Miracles. It's God's fight. It's the hand of God, or the hand of Christ, so it said. He said, as you look upon it, you will remember that it was always so. You get back to, wait a minute, the eternally in the timeless realm of the present. It was always so. And so how do we do it? First, surrender. I don't know if listeners or anybody has any 12 steps experience or sobering experience. It doesn't have to be with drugs or alcohol or other drugs. It could be with anything where we find ourselves compulsively seeking something outside of ourselves to deal with the symptom, to make ourselves feel better, and not necessarily dealing with the cause. Because a lot of times you don't know what the cause is. You just know, I don't feel good, I don't like it, and I need something to help me feel better. But to get recovery, to get a change, the first thing you have to do is what? Is surrender. You have to surrender. And you don't even know what you have to know what you're surrendering to. I just surrender. Whatever it is, I'm stopping now. I surrender. I'll figure out all that other stuff later.
And in this book I was talking about earlier, he talks about peace. When you talk in surrender, he's talking peace. And he says, peace is the natural, essential, and true emotional state of man's being. Establishing and maintaining it in all situations is the principal key to success in life. says nothing in life can be of value if we are not at peace with it. Peace is pervasive throughout one's life. It's peace that is pervasive throughout one's life is called happiness. Once it is realized that no one can avoid upsets, denials, or catastrophes in life, and no one will get everything desired or get to keep them, they will then realize that nothing they can do can secure their happiness, but an unassailable inner peace, which is developed through spiritual cultivation. That the importance of peace in our lives can be seen in the fact that when we are at peace, as opposed to being upset, angry, afraid, etc., our thinking is clearer, our IQ is higher, we exhibit more strength, we exhibit better health and healing, we perform better, and so on. When two persons are physically assaulted, they both suffer physical pain. One lives in fear and anger, and the other one remains in peace with the occurrence. Who's better off? The person who is at peace, they heal faster, and they're able to get along in life a lot better. The other person would not fare so well and possibly die in an emotional turbulence. So that's talking about non-resistance and being in the now with what is, and then proceeding from that to go into use your spiritual tools or your spiritual development, which will guide you and lead you and help you out of that situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. I have something that also assists in bringing peace, and this is from The Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science. His book is The Science of Mind, and the teaching is The Science of Mind and Spirit. And spirit usually gets dropped. I just want to add that in there. And this is what he says about surrender in dealing with physical perfection. But, of course, we know that it's more than that. So he says, disease will be healed provided you get at its cause and remove it. And by getting at its cause, we mean getting at the mental cause. And provided the one for whom you are working is willing to surrender that cause. And that primarily means for someone who's a spiritual practitioner working with a client. However, it could be working with yourself as well. He says, you cannot heal anyone of his trouble if it is a result of some mental attitude which he will not surrender. And in other words, you cannot heal yourself of any trouble if it is a result of some mental attitude that you will not surrender. In this case, find out what the mental attitude is and remove it. And it says, if this can be done before disease destroys a physical body, a healing will always follow. And so here's another instance of the power of surrender. You have to surrender the cause, whatever that mental attitude is. And you can think of it, and this is in alignment with what you were just speaking about, Audra, that people who are cancer survivors, many cancer survivors, it's imperative that they change their mental attitude. Because it's been said, and I think it's been said by Louise Hayes and Hay and others, that cancer, which is created by a mental attitude of unresolved resentment.
Yeah.
That when anger builds up and it becomes resentment and it is not dealt with, it creates a toxic realm in the body, environment in the body, and that creates cancer. Now, it's been said that cancer, the potential for cancer is in every cell, in every body, in everybody's body. However, it's the mental attitude that can spark them, these cells, into misalignment or misforming, or you know, forming, growing at a hazardous rate. And usually, cancer survivors change their attitude. They no longer harbor anger and resentment, and they use laughter, and they do their best to not let things get to them, and they don't have a reoccurrence of the cancer. This has kind of been proven. And people who don't change, the cancer comes out of remission, and they go through it again, maybe in some other part of the body. And they don't get it. They don't want, they have not changed their mental attitude. So therefore, when you surrender and you're in peace, that affects your whole body. There's a healing that takes place. And if you're not in peace, and that would be in extra stress or warfare in your own mind and therefore your own body, then you're going to have occurrences of situations physically that are the result of not being at peace with oneself or one's perceptions. And I think it was Eckhart Tolle who was talking about the seeing the bodies, and it sounded pretty gross. Where was that?
Uh-huh.
About the death and dying and
yeah.
He was
very
gory.
Yeah. It was really gory.
Like, you gotta let it go. Yeah, he says, if you believe on a deep level in separation and the struggle for survival, then you see that belief reflected all around you, and your perceptions are governed by fear. You inhabit a world of death and of bodies fighting, killing, and devouring each other. Like, wow, where was he going with that one? But when you practice peace and you're surrendering, then, you know, you're living in the now, and things are cohabitable.
Yes.
You know,
and I want to read this to you again from this book, My Art, The 11 Laws of God. It says, your nature is an unconquerable peace. Therefore, nothing or no one in the world can be against you. All experiences or challenges that come to you come to promote your reclamation of peace, that you may in turn acquire wisdom and power. And so what he's saying is that when you're in the now and you're not in resistance to what's going on, and you can look at that experience and claim the peace there, you claim your wisdom of how to deal with it, and then the power to enable you to deal with it, to see it through. But you can't get that peace if you're in struggle, if you're in resistance, because one is the opposite of the other one. You can't have hot and cold in the same place at the same time. You're going to be either hot or you're going to be cold. And so if you're in resistance, you can't get the peace that you need to clear your mind to be able to think as to what you will be able to do for that situation. You're just thinking about what's going on and how you don't like it, rather than thinking about, well, what is it that I can do with it to make it, to get out of this, to be at peace with it. And once you come to how can I be at peace with this, change your thinking about the situation, and then you change your reaction to the situation, and then you have the power then to change your mind. And then when you change your mind about the situation, then the situation will shift to match what you're thinking about it. And it's just amazing. You can see that happen right in front of your face.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, one thing I'd like to mention, and we're just going to take a little break. We're going to surrender in this moment, and I think we've jumped wonderfully into the meaning of surrender. I do want to acknowledge that we do have Brenda listening, and Just wanted to give her a shout out. Hi, Brenda.
How you doing, Brenda?
Brenda, if you wanted to say hello, you certainly could do that right now. And
hi, hello.
I'm glad you've been able to join us today, tonight.
Yeah, thank you, thank you.
Was there anything that you wanted to share about what you've heard?
Oh, just awesome. I love the reminder about what Hadra was saying in regards to Ricky, letting, things go organically or, because we have no control over that. It's just see what happens and just go with it and being prayerful as we move forward. So
yes.
I thank you.
Yeah, she helped me. I tell you, it changed my whole thing. It was amazing.
Well, and the thing is, that's in such so alignment with this because usually when you surrender and don't give power to the ego, things will, go the way they're going to go anyway. It's that the ego thinks it can do something about it. And usually it's going to make it worse.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, during one of those sessions at the workshop with Ricky Byers-Beckwith, we started doing a song that many of us know called I Love Myself So Much. And there are some physical, it's like you get a partner and you sing to your partner. And so we started doing that. And I was really getting into it. And so what Ricky wanted us to do was not do that anymore. But I was so into it, I'm like looking for more partners. And it's going, Rodney, and somebody had to get my attention. And like, okay, now, then she moved it to the next stage because she was doing something different than we normally would do. But I was just kind of stuck in, hey, this is what I like to do. And so a few of us had, he called my attention to it. And so then we had to listen to what she wanted us to do next. And for a moment, I felt, pretty stupid. I was like, oh, my God. I was just doing my own thing, But that was okay. I got out of that thinking very quickly. And I was able to be with the group and what we were doing. And that reminds me, it's like I didn't think that it was my ego that was trying to control anything. However, I know that my ego was stuck in doing what we were doing, because it's a doer. And I'm doing this thing that I like.
Yeah.
But there was something even greater that came out of what Ricky wanted to do, which was have us do it in a group. Think to each other in a group and build a community that way, not just one-on-one or one with one. And so I see that as, wow, sometimes, even though we're used to doing it one way, I was open to change and have a totally different experience, change my perception. I learned something. I told her. I said, hey, I really learned something about community good, not just all about what one person thinks. That's what I think. It was something that benefited the whole group, and we got to kind of meld with each other in singing this one song to more than one person. And if you remember, we made circles of about maybe...
Right, eight, yeah, circles of eight.
Well, that was great.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful exercise. So anyway, I just wanted to bring it up based on what Brenda had added and based on what you brought to the table. So thank you guys very much. I can see that. I get to see clearly now.
We can see clearly now.
I'm not going to sing. Don't worry about it. No.
Yeah. But, I tell you, it reminded me of the woman who was playing the violin.
Yeah.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And she just got totally consumed in the violin. And she closed her eyes, and she just kept playing. And it was like they had to actually interrupt her because she was just into a whole nother world. And so she said to Ricky, she says, well, why didn't you tell me? No, she says, why didn't you tell me? She says, I tried, but you had your eyes closed.
Right, that's right.
So you couldn't even see me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then at the actual concert, she had to come down front, and she started playing. It was beautiful. It really was. And she closed her eyes. And so at the point that where Ricky wanted her to stop, Ricky just started playing the piano.
Right, that's right.
She started playing the piano, and then she calmed it down, and she stopped playing the violin. But
oh,
I said that
was
so.
She didn't play for as long either. Yeah,
she didn't play for as long because Ricky wanted to cue her in to stop, you know. But again, she closed her eyes. She went into her own world. And so then Ricky had to bring her back. But it was not about the ego. It was her doing her thing, you know, and getting
so caught up in it, like you did. Right. But that's still the ego, you know, because, and now maybe it wasn't painful. It's painful to the ego, but that's okay, you know. But the thing is, it's still that which separates one from another. And so when she was into that zone and she's making beautiful music, it was kind of excluding her and separating her from everything else that was going on.
Right.
Because she was a little bit out there. But that was, you know, but it sounded beautiful and not many people knew the difference anyway.
Right.
But those that were in rehearsal knew where that was supposed to fit in. And you know, I just wanted to say that, not that it's a bad thing, I'm not labeling it. However, I'm saying that in that moment, there was a moment when she transcended, went past the now, and was into whatever world she was in.
Right.
And the thing is, we still get to be in the now, regardless of what anybody says or does.
Uh-huh.
And so Ricky brought her back into the now of the group, not just her personal now, but the now of the group.
Right.
And so, yeah, so that's great, you know. And I recognize that, too. I definitely saw that. So that's awesome. And that's what we do, and that's part of the meaning of surrender. And even Ricky Byers Beckwith had to surrender in that moment to not allowing somebody to go off into their own personal moment.
Right.
To bring, you know, because you could, the thoughts of, well, maybe I should let them go and then wait till they finish, but there are other musicians and singers to think about. You know?
Right.
So she had a little surrender to any other possibility. And holding on to what's good for the whole group, you know. So that's wonderful. So Eckhart Tolle, as we begin to wind up, and we're on page 173, and I read some of this already. It says, if you find a life situation unsatisfactory or even intolerable, it is only by surrendering first that you can break the unconscious resistance pattern that perpetuates that situation. Surrender is perfectly compatible with taking action, initiating change, or achieving goals. But in a surrendered state, a totally different energy, a different quality, flows into your doing. Surrender reconnects you with the source energy of being. And if your doing is infused with being, it becomes a joyful celebration of life energy that takes you more deeply into the now. Through non-resistance, the quality of your consciousness and, therefore, the quality of whatever you are doing or creating is enhanced immeasurably. The result will then look after themselves and reflect that quality. You could call this surrendered action. He goes on to say, it is not work as we have known it for thousands of years. As more humans awaken, the word work is going to disappear from our vocabulary, and perhaps a new word will be created to replace it. I think that's interesting. Let's finish this last paragraph. It says, it is a quality of your consciousness at this moment that is the main determinant of what kind of future you will experience. So to surrender is the most important thing you can do to bring about positive change. Any action you take is secondary. No truly positive action can arise out of an unsurrendered state of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So every positive action arises out of a surrendered state of consciousness. Mm. So positive action precedes or comes from, so you need a surrendered state of consciousness which precedes positive action. So think about situations in your life where you had a positive action. Can you see where you had surrendered, where you had a surrendered state of consciousness, allowing for what is, and then having a positive action? Now, we can probably say that about getting out of bed in the morning. You know, I surrender. Looks like I'm not going to fall back to sleep. I might as well get up and then have positive action follow you throughout your morning or whenever you get up. It's like if we can look at things on such a simple basis like that, you surrender to what is, and maybe that will be our homework for anybody who's listening in the archives or live. Or on the internet. Take a look at your positive actions and then think, what happened before that? What state of consciousness was I in before that positive action? Now, what are you calling a positive action? Well, positive action is not negative. Some good had occurred.
Yeah. Positive action would be something that's beneficial to yourself and all those involved.
That's
it has
right.
to
and
be
it doesn't
something
have to be a big
good.
Thing. Right.
It doesn't have to
big
be a
thing.
Big thing, but
right.
it just has to be a positive action that is beneficial. It could be
that's
as
great.
Small as
so,
a smile, even though a smile
right.
is a big thing. But, you know, could it
that's
bring
right.
a smile to somebody's face, or a good morning, or a hello, or have a good day? What
right.
In this book, Ma'at, that I'm reading, he calls it peace. Come to peace with that particular moment. Come to peace with it, in and now with it. And my mom used to always say, regardless of what was going on, was to keep the peace. And I could never understand why she wanted to keep the peace when seemingly at times all hell was breaking loose. It's like, this is not the time to keep the peace.
That's right.
But
that's
she
right.
was keeping
and
the
that's
peace.
The perfect
and
time.
That was her mantra, yeah.
And that's the perfect time to keep the peace. So
mm-hmm.
on that note, we're going to keep the peace and we're going to surrender to the time that we have allotted for today. Please give us a wonderful, quick words of surrender, Ajra, in the next 15 seconds.
Well, I know and I just think that we are in a zone where we realize that it is in the power of now. It is in the power of surrendering the whatever that is negative into that state of surrender and into that peace that surpasses all understanding, that we get the strength and the power to rise above and to make it right. And so I bless
yes.
everyone in their practice of surrendering and keeping the peace this week and see where that takes you. It will take you to wonderful places. Amen.
Amen to that. And so it is. This is One and Love
so
Center. One Love Center Teaching Chapter, One Love Center Presents. Thank you, Reverend Hajar Rahim. Thank you for our listeners. I thank the Creator. I thank Eckhart Tolle for the power of now, a guide to spiritual enlightenment. I am knowing that each of us are benefiting from this very opportunity. Thank you, and please join us again next week for the Power of Now book study. Okay, guys.
All right.
So recording is over.
Okay. Sounds good.
So that was fun. How are you doing, Brenda?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. I'm sorry. I wanted to say everything was fantastic, but that one that one totally resonates with me for this week, for sure.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was like,
where
was I when she said that? I must have been zoning out.
Yeah, you weren't there.
Wait, she talked about the organic process? That was Friday night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that was Friday night.
Yeah, that was Friday night.
Right.
And
right.
She really got me out of my resistance, because I was very much into resistance with the situation here at home. And
yeah.
I was like, well, I'll be damned, you know, kind of attitude. And she helped me. When she said that, I'm like, yeah, just go with it. It's organic. I mean, first of all, I couldn't stop it. That's number one, you know?
Right.
And so then what do? It's like you go with it, you know, and see what happens and bring some love in it and just work with it. And that's what I did, and it's just been beautiful.
Yes, bring some love
in it.
It's just been beautiful,
but I had to get out of my resistance.
Yeah,
and that's where I was stuck. I was stuck in it. So I couldn't find my way out. You know, I had to have a helping hand. And she helped me. She gave me the hand. You know, like sometimes when you're down low, you need to have somebody to pull you up a little higher.
Oh, yeah.
She pulled me up. I'm like, oh, okay, I can do this. And it's been great. I've been enjoying it. So instead of being in a hell, I'm in a heaven, you know. It's a state of mind, seriously.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Awesome.
I'm loving it. Just loving it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thanks for participating, Brenda.
Oh, no problem. I was like, woo.
Yeah, it's good. It's all good.
Yep.
Alrighty. So these guys are calling me, so I gotta go. They've been at my door. I guess you heard that.
Yeah,
you needed me at one point.
I had to move the phone when I heard the kids.
Yeah, I thought I had my finger over the mic, but I guess not.
No, it didn't work.
You didn't work, huh?
No.
But anyway, yeah, they were coming in anyhow. Close the door.
We need you.
Yeah, close the door. Oh, it's funny. But okay, Rodney, each week are you going to have to create the episode, or can you do it ahead of time?
Yeah,
or what?
No, they don't have a calendar anymore. So
okay,
I'm going to create it now since I'm on already.
Uh huh.
I can do it for the next week, but I can't do it for the month or anything.
Oh, okay. So we have to do it 1 week in advance.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, and Brenda.
So I'm gonna do that now.
Yes, dear.
We talked about doing the four agreements and talked about doing the fifth agreement.
Okay.
For our next book. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, me too. It came to me today. The four agreements, like, of course, hello.
Yes, and I have the workbook too.
Yeah, I don't have the workbook. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So I'm thinking might as well do the fifth agreement since there's five.
Uh-huh.
It'll just lead right into it.
This will lead into the fifth
agreement. You know, the book covers the four agreements first anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And the fifth agreement covers the four agreements first?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, because I don't have a copy of that. I ordered it online at Amazon. So I'll get it next week before we get into it anyway, because I did not buy the fifth agreement. At least I don't think I did.
So we're going to do the four agreements first, right?
Well,
Rodney wants to start
with
the fifth
book, but we'll work out of the fifth agreement book.
Oh,
because
okay.
The fifth agreement has the four agreements. It intros with the four agreements.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when
that
you start...
Good. What?
When are you starting that?
When we finish this?
Okay.
When I'm done?
I got time. It's not next week.
Yeah, no, it's not next week.
Yeah, no,
I won't be for a couple of weeks away that we're going through this.
You know, know, it took us about probably 3 months to get through chapter 9. You know?
It's going to take a minute.
But surrender.
There's a lot of stuff here, let me tell you. It is meaty.
Yeah, once we get Reverend Mwata back on surrender, it's
oh,
going
yeah.
to take us a long time.
Yeah, it gets a long time. And I started reading this book. It's on the Kemet things, the Tree of Life and the Egyptian stuff.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, and so he talks about peace. Peace being
mm-hmm.
our natural state is the state of the Creator.
Mm.
Right? And he
mm-hmm.
says the man's main goal in life is the same as that of God, to enjoy life, to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so, but you can only be happy if you are in alignment with the laws of God, which gives you the wisdom, the spiritual power to be happy and to stay at peace in face of all challenges.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty, I mean, it's helped me a lot go a little bit deeper than what, you know, I knew and, you know, how, you know, you have all these questions and it just keeps tweaking things, you know?
Yeah.
It's just tweaking and tweaking and tweaking. I'm like, whoa, that's another tweak. Oh, that's another little tweak over here, tweak over there. I'm getting tweaked all over the place.
Yeah.
So this is really, really nice. Really, really nice. I'm like, okay, I can get these tweaks. This is really nice. I've read one. I'm going to read it again. Are you going to go through to the ladies' retreat?
Oh, no.
This weekend? You're not going?
Oh, I already told
her. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going.
Yeah. Oh, Brenda, you're not going to go?
No, thanks.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so I haven't been on retreat in a while. I think, you know, in Seattle, I've gone at least 2 retreats a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't been able to get on a retreat. You know, so I'm hoping this is, you know, has the same type of, you know, format as a retreat does, where you
yeah.
you're out in the woods, you do your stuff, you have some quiet time.
Yeah.
And so that's what I want to do is have some quiet time. It's really nice.
Yeah, you
well, it's a good thing
yeah.
to be in the woods without the bugs at this time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, really. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. All right, guys. I'm going to
okay.
get something to eat.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank
you.
I'll
talk to you later. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
good.
Hey,
bye-bye.
Rod?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Rod?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to go to a funeral tomorrow?
What?
Are we supposed to go to a funeral tomorrow, or is that Friday?
Friday.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Thanks.
All right. Honey. All right. Get some food.
Yeah. All right.
A double check. You don't want to miss
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I am.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we'll
okay,
do.
Talk to you. Okay,
thanks,
love
love.
You.
Okay. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Okay, all right.